Welcome to episode 60 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. If you want to burn fat, gain energy, and enhance your health by changing when you eat, not what you eat, with no calorie counting, then this show is for you. I'm Melanie Avalon, author of What, When, Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. And I'm here with my co-host, Jen Stevens, author of Delay, Don't Deny, Living an Intermittent Fasting Lifestyle. For more on us, check out ifpodcast.com, melanieavalon.com, and jenstevens.com. Please remember, the thoughts and opinions on this podcast do not constitute medical advice or treatment. So, pour yourself a cup of black coffee, a mug of tea, or even a glass of wine, if it's that time, and get ready for the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Okay, friends. People often ask me, what is the one supplement I cannot imagine my life without? And while there are a lot of supplements out there, a lot of ones that I love, a lot of ones that I advocate, there is one supplement that inspired me to create a whole supplement line. And that's because I take it every single day and I really can't imagine my life without it. That would be Serapeptase. And I'm about to tell you how to get up to 15% off on a special bottle version that we have that also saves you money. So Serapeptase is a proteolytic enzyme created by the Japanese silkworm. Now we make it in a lab, so it is vegan. When you take this enzyme in the fasted state, it actually goes into your bloodstream and it breaks down problematic proteins in your body. These are things that your immune system is often reacting to and that create inflammation. That's why it can do incredible, amazing things like clear your sinuses. That's why I first started taking it. You can completely say goodbye to allergy meds with Serapeptase. It reduces inflammation and pain. My friend just started taking it for her back pain and told me she was shocked at how effective it was, more so than the pain pills she normally was taking. It can help reduce cholesterol. It's even been shown in clinical studies to break down amyloid plaque in vitro and in vivo. Basically, it is a wonder supplement. And what's super cool about it is that it specifically breaks down those problematic non-living proteins. It doesn't harm healthy tissue. It actually helps protect that. That's because the function of the original enzyme in the silkworm is to break down the cocoon of the silkworm without actually harming the silkworm itself. And there aren't studies on this, but I really believe it can help catalyze your fast by enhancing the natural process of autophagy. Again, not studies on that, but from a mechanistic standpoint, it totally makes sense. Here's the thing. I was taking so many different brands of Serapeptase, and they always seemed a little hard on my stomach and have problematic ingredients in them, especially special enteric coatings where they wouldn't disclose what that was made of, which meant it probably contained problematic plastics. I knew I needed to make a change. That's why I created my Avalon X Serapeptase. It's what launched my Avalon X line. I will never stop taking it. It's one of my favorite things in my life, and the effects I experience are profound, and I hear that from all of you guys as well. We test it multiple times for purity and potency. It's free of all problematic fillers and common allergens. It comes in a glass bottle to help prevent leaching of plastics into ourselves and the environment. And we even use the minimum amount of stickiness in the label on the bottle to help reduce problematic compounds. So if you want to tackle your inflammation, clear your brain fog, oh, it's amazing for brain fog, stop your allergies, attack amyloid plaque, reduce pain, so many things, you need Serapeptase. And you can get 10% off with the coupon code Melanie Avalon. But here's another thing. We actually have a special large bottle. It's the only supplement that we have right now in a large bottle. It's the 180 version and it saves you money. If Serapeptase is a part of your daily life, like it is mine, you definitely want our large bottle size, 180 capsules. It's the best way to save. And again, you can save even more with my Melanie Avalon 10% discount, or you can get 15% off that as well if you get a subscription, which by the way, with a subscription, you could pause or cancel anytime after your first order. So it kind of makes sense to do a subscription because you save even more. If you want a supplement that you can actually feel the difference, I promise you, Serapeptase is the way to go. And then you might end up like me and want to give it as gifts to everybody because it's that incredible and can address so many issues. You can get this at avalonx.us. That's AVALONX.US. Again, there is the 90 capsule size and the 180 capsule size. You save more with the 180. Use the coupon code Melanie Avalon for 10% off or get a subscription for 15% off. And we will put all this information in the show notes.
One more thing before we jump in. Did you know that common ingredients found in skincare and makeup products can actually disrupt your endocrine system? These endocrine disruptors are a silent threat that can have significant impact on your health, including something that is very important to me, fertility. Your skin is your body's largest organ, and what you put on it matters. Endocrine disruptors are chemicals that interfere with the natural hormonal communication in the body. It also matters during pregnancy, and that's one of the reasons I pay close attention to what I put on my skin while being pregnant. Studies have shown that exposure to endocrine disruptors can affect both male and female fertility. For women, these disruptors can lead to irregular menstrual cycles, ovulation issues, and even polycystic ovarian syndrome, or PCOS. In men, they can reduce sperm quality and quantity, making it even more challenging to conceive. But it's not just about fertility. When it comes to fat loss, one of the reasons that endocrine disruptors can get in the way of fat loss is because a lot of our toxins are actually stored in our fat. It's a way that our bodies protect us from those toxins. These toxic compounds can even work synergistically, amplifying their harmful effects and making it that much harder to shed unwanted body fat. All of these reasons are why I am obsessed with a company called Beauty Counter. The founder actually started the company when she learned about the potential dangers of toxic chemicals and their link to health issues, specifically miscarriages and infertility. While pregnant, I make sure to only use Beauty Counter products. It's one of the only makeup lines that is officially recommended from the Environmental Working Group. What really sets Beauty Counter apart is their unwavering commitment to protecting us, the consumers, from the hidden dangers that lurk in conventional beauty products. Beauty Counter goes above and beyond, rigorously screening every single ingredient that goes into their products, ensuring that they are safe, clean, and free from harmful toxins. They're not just a beauty brand, they're a movement for change, advocating for stronger regulations in the beauty industry. With Beauty Counter, I know that I can trust that the skincare and makeup that I use are not only effective, but also safe for me and my family. They have skincare lines for every skin type, as well as so many other incredible products. I absolutely love their overnight resurfacing peel. It's my favorite way to get anti-aging benefits in a skincare product. The makeup is absolutely amazing. I have tried alternative beauty products in the past and none of them truly performed. But with Beauty Counter, the foundation is so amazing. It makes me feel like my skin can breathe and it looks so dewy and beautiful. You can shop with me at beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. New customers can use the code CLEANFORALL20 for 20% off their first order. Beautycounter.com/VanessaSpina. All right, friends, now back to the show.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. This is episode number 60 of the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. I'm Melanie Avalon, and I'm here with Jen Stevens.
Hi, everybody.
How are you today, Jen?
Well, I am fabulous. I am officially retired from elementary teaching.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I read in the Facebook group how this went, but how did the graduation go?
Well, okay. I didn't really know. I mean, I thought it was possible I could be emotional, but then I thought it was possible I could hold it together because I'm used to speaking in front of fifth grade graduation every year. So I, like, in my head knew what I was going to say, and I was going to just talk about how great this group of kids was, which is true because it was just a great, great group to go out on. So I started talking and I started, like, trying to say it, and I was like, and my voice was breaking up, and I was like, I mean, like, this whole room, this gym is full of parents and grandparents and the kids. I'm like, oh, I was going to be calm. And then I, like, was able to get back on track. And then though, I recognized my first group of students, then I had another group to recognize, and they came up, and then I gave them a hug, and then I started crying, and then the third group I was going to recognize, I was like, I can't talk about it, what they did. And then they came up, and I was like, now let's all clap, and then I left. So it was very emotional. You can be excited about retiring and also know that you're going to miss it a lot.
And how does it feel now?
Well, it feels weird right this minute because, you know, for 28 years of teaching, I've had summer break. So right now it just feels like summer break. You know, I left the school and it's always weird on the last day because everybody's cleaning up their rooms and some people are moving classrooms and everybody's taking stuff down and the school's a mess. And so it was like that. And it was time to go. And I was like, all right, bye. And I hugged some people, but I didn't cry today. But it just felt like any other summer. I almost cried when my husband posted something really sweet on Facebook about it, but that was the only time. And I also have realized that when you're retiring, people give you champagne as a gift a lot. Oh. So that was nice.
So you're good with champagne for a while.
Yeah, I've got some champagne in the fridge. And I also got a really sweet gift from a colleague today. She brought me a whole bunch of eggs that her hens laid.
Oh. See, I would love that. That's really cool.
I did love it. Yeah, and she's going to teach me how to make kombucha this summer. She makes kombucha, and I told her about the bread. So I'm going to teach her how to make bread, and she's going to teach me how to make kombucha. But we have to do it before August because she has to go back to work.
It's funny, speaking of pet hens and such, I remember I was researching, I don't know what I was researching, eggs. Probably eggs, but I found a thing saying that some people raise chickens in apartments, that they're like really, okay. Or was it chickens or was it ducks? It was some sort of bird.
Okay, that's funny. And do they sleep with you in your goat pit?
Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
No, I really would like to have chickens, but I don't know. Do cats and chickens coexist well? I've got these cats.
I don't know.
So I don't know. But it was interesting to talk to her. She told me a lot about the eggs because, you know, you don't refrigerate fresh eggs when you have them, you know, on your own property. You don't have to put them in the fridge and they last for a long time.
They're probably really
just
nutritious.
Just like on the counter. Yeah. I'm excited. We're going to have egg sandwiches for dinner.
Ooh, yum. I remember my best friend in elementary school, they had pet sheep. Like, for just random. Like, they had a pen outside with two sheep in it.
That is random. That's they're very cute. They didn't do anything with the wool.
No.
Oh.
I just remember, I can still see it in my head.
I told you my family had goats for a while, right? Did I tell you about my family had goats?
No.
I don't know if I mentioned that when you talked about the goat bed. My parents had a horse farm for a while and raised paint horses. And so I was too old. I was already in college by the time they got horses. But my sister and my brother did a lot of like horse shows and they competed. And my sister was doing goat tying. So they got goats so she could practice goat tying.
Goat tying?
Yeah, it's like an event in the Western horse world. You have to tie up a goat, and whoever ties it up the fastest is the winner. And my sister was the national champion for her age range at tying up goats.
Is that still legal?
I don't know. She was great at goat tying.
Wow.
I'm sure it's legal. I mean, they do all sorts of things with sport.
And one of my friends in high school, she had a pet flying squirrel. And she would keep it in her purse.
That's weird. Yeah. All right. Interesting pets. Starring Jen and Melanie.
I know. I decided now I just want fish. Like I don't, or like a Venus flytrap or something. I don't want animals.
Yeah, fish. Well, fish are animals. They're.
I mean, yeah. Like, I want contained animals that don't smell.
I know what you mean. They're not furry.
And aren't allergic.
Yeah, that's a good.
Oh, I remember one time, and then this will be my last animal story, when we were looking in houses, when we were moving, when I was around, like, third grade, we looked in a house, and there was an aquarium, and it had an alligator in it.
Oh, gosh.
Like, a little baby alligator. But, I mean, that would get big, right? So, like.
It would. And are those legal to keep in a house?
I don't know.
I feel like those are not. Like, those are one thing you're probably not supposed to have.
We definitely walked in the boys' room, and there was a tank with an alligator.
Wow. That's weird.
And speaking of alligators, my last thought. I feel like people who aren't from the South or have never been to Florida don't understand the concept of alligators.
Oh, it's true. We were in Hilton Head this past weekend, and we saw, I mean, they had alligators live on the property of the resort we were in. We saw alligators. Just like, there they are. There's an alligator.
Just the concept that you can live in a place where there are these huge, massive animals that look like, that are like dinosaur-esque, that could chop you to pieces, and they are just outside.
There they are, yeah.
I remember, like, it's see pictures. I saw pictures of my friend who, they went to Florida, and they'd never been to Florida before, and they had all these pictures of them just like swimming in the ponds and swimming in the lakes. And I was like, "What are you doing?" No, get out.
No. yeah, it is interesting. We have them around here. They come up the Savannah River.
Ugh.
I mean, they are in Augusta. We'll see an alligator here and there. They're not like roaming the streets or anything, but they do come up the river.
When I was in Memphis, I think that's about the farthest up they go, up the Mississippi
River. Okay. I didn't know they'd be that far. That's interesting.
And one time there was a manatee in the Mississippi River in Memphis.
Wow. Yeah. I haven't heard of those in Augusta.
Crazy. Yep. All right.
So we did hit a milestone. Would we like to talk about exciting milestone that just happened? Share it with us.
So we hit 1 million downloads.
Yay! Another reason to drink champagne.
I know. And it's rapidly escalating. Now we're like much farther past 1 million downloads. So
that's great.
Keep on keeping on.
If
we could get a penny for each download, what would that be? What would a penny for each?
All right, move the decimal over two places. So
I'll let you figure it out.
Okay, that would be $10,000.
We should have thought about that before Jokes.
Yeah, that would be nice. Jokes. Okay. Anyway.
But if listeners would like to support the podcast, you can do so on Patreon. patreon.com/ifpodcast. We would gladly accept any donations for support. It's really helpful.
That would be awesome.
Alrighty.
Shall we get started?
Yes.
With some intermittent fasting.
Yes. So to start things off, we have some listener feedback. This is actually really old listener feedback, but I was going through all of the emails and I realized we left some out, and this one just made me chuckle. So I thought I'd throw it in there. So this is from Angelica, and the subject is bubbles. And Angelica says, "Hi, Melanie. I just listened to episode 33, and I wanted you to know that when I used to drink soda, I would always swish out the bubbles in my mouth before swallowing. You got to keep your mouth open, too, so they can escape, LOL. And when I had drank enough to have room in the top of the can or cup, I gently start shaking it so the bubbles would dissipate that way. Ha ha. Nowadays, I'm good with carbonation and champagne or beer, but not in kombucha. Oh, speaking of, just thought you'd like to know. So I'm not alone with my bubble swishing."
That's great. I'm drinking my sparkling mineral water.
And you
water
don't
right
swish
now.
It? You just drink it and you let all those bubbles get into your...
Yeah. I don't swish it. I just drink it. Yep. I just swallow it down. I just like tried to see what I did. Yep. I just drank it. Nothing fancy.
Oh, I can't.
Yeah. Do you do that with champagne too?
I'm not a huge champagne fan, actually.
Okay.
I don't know. Probably not. Probably not, because you sip it so slowly, you know? Yeah. It's probably not. But
fascinating.
Hi, friends. Now, I know most of you are familiar with the power of protein to help us to recompose our bodies, get fitter and leaner by losing body fat and protecting and gaining muscle or lean body mass. Now, protein supplementation is one of the best ways to do it. It is scientifically validated. to help us produce high-quality weight loss. Now, when it comes to weight loss, traditionally, a lot of people will do high-carb, low-calorie diets, and those have been shown to generate upwards of 40% lean body mass loss. Now, protecting your lean body mass and your muscle is crucial when you are wanting to lose some fat, because during weight loss, you don't want the weight lost to be coming from your muscle. The more muscle you're able to retain, the more you're retaining metabolically active tissue, which is going to keep your metabolic rate much higher and help you maintain the fat loss after you have achieved it. Now, one of the best ways, as I said, to do this is through using protein shakes. I've been on the lookout for years to find a high quality protein supplement that does not have fillers, dyes, artificial sweeteners, and using cheap protein concentrate, which can cause all kinds of issues like bloating and indigestion. I finally created a protein supplement that meets my standards, and it's something that I personally use every single day, and that is Tone Protein. Tone Protein not only is extremely clean and high quality with only whey protein isolate, no concentrates, no fillers, it is also scientifically formulated to optimize muscle protein synthesis, which is going to help you build lean body mass and muscle in the most efficient way possible. I am so incredibly excited about Tone Protein. Not only is it extremely high quality and optimized to help you recompose your body, it is also absolutely delicious. We've been having so much fun with all the different flavors that we are creating, and I just can't wait for you all to try it. Now, I wanted to create a special launch discount for all of you listeners so that you could check it out, try it out, see how you like it, and test it out for yourself. In order to receive that launch discount, you can head over to toneprotein.com and sign up with your name and email address, and you'll receive an email to double opt in to the list, and you will be the first to know when Tone Protein is available to order, and you will also receive that exclusive launch discount. It is going to be the biggest discount that we ever offer on Tone Protein, so I really want all of you to be able to receive it. So be sure to go to toneprotein.com, sign up with your name and email, and you'll be double opted in to that list. And I am so excited for you all to try it out. Let me know what you think of it, and let it help you to optimize your body recomposition goals, get that fat loss, and maintain and protect your lean body mass while doing it.
All right. Are we ready for our next listener feedback?
Yes.
This one is from Lee, and the subject is thank you. And Lee says, Jen and Melanie, I want to thank you both for being an important part of so many wonderful changes in my life due to IF. At 56, I've spent much of my life searching for physical and emotional health, strength, and a goal of loving my body through the foods I eat, searching in other areas too, of course, but I'm sticking to foods for this note. I'm surprised to find that I have accidentally done a version of IF much of my adult life, although an unhealthy version previously. However, my goal was the number on the scale, and it was always in secret because others always negatively commented when I didn't eat like they did. Those comments and the unhealthy version, eating mostly sugar when I did eat, led me to years of anxiety because of the harm I felt I was doing to my body. Now, with your help, I've switched to a healthy version of IF, and I'm blown away by the multitude of benefits I'm already experiencing after just a few weeks. My health/food journey has been a long one, and I love that you both support the kind of thinking where it's something I can always be fine-tuning and learning about and enhancing. I love, too, that you both support finding what works for each person individually, and you offer so many options for us to experiment with in finding the best solutions for each of us. For example, though the flavored coffee doesn't work for many as it might make them hungry by stimulating their taste buds, it works amazingly for me, and it makes me feel like I've just had a treat and go on with the IF to conclusion. I love the diversity and variety for each of us in IF, always being able to check in with the two of you if we're feeling off base in any way or need help in the fine tuning. I look forward to more of that on my journey. If I do feel a step back in any food area, I always know I'll be able to take two steps forward soon. I just need to listen to more of your podcasts. So, since IF was not a far reach for me, except for the sugar addiction, I noticed improvements instantly. I especially love the body transformation process where I already fit into my clothes from the previous size, even though the number on the scale doesn't say that. I love your terminology of desensitizing myself to the number on the scale and instead focusing on the weight loss trend. Even more exciting for me personally are the emotional benefits I'm experiencing and the energy. I feel like I'm on an emotional high, so positive and upbeat all the time, and I'm so glad to have those in my life benefit from my positivity as well. My newfound energy is an amazing gift. All done with my holiday prep because of this energy and now able to listen to some more podcasts and practice self-care. A great positive upward spiral. So much more I want to thank you both for. I love so much about your podcasts, and it feels like I'm sitting down with a cup of coffee, black of course, with two friends to chat about lifestyle improvements. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I'm so loving this IF approach, and I'm so grateful to have so many benefits to look forward to and to keep improving upon, Lee. Lee, I loved reading that feedback, and thank you for sharing that. Now, I have one little thing I want to stick in there.
I know what you're going to say.
She knows.
I almost interrupted you while reading it. I was like, oh, but nope.
Yeah. And that is the flavored coffee. I have a blog post that we will link, and it is all about the clean fast, and it talks about many different things besides just, of course, things that are definitely sweet, like the artificial sweeteners. And one of those things is the flavored coffee. And I caution you to be careful about that. It's possible that there are some flavors of flavored coffee that may not be a problem, but there are just so many variables. We don't know what they're putting in it. They call things natural flavors. We don't know what they are. And it's all about what your body perceives it to be. For example, if you have a flavored coffee that's called, some of them are easy, right? Like cinnamon roll flavored coffee. You know your body is going to be more likely to think that one is sweet. You know, or if it's like chocolate dream flavored coffee or something, you know, you can tell from the name. You don't want your body to taste it and think that you're having food. So I always suggest not to have flavored coffee. That's part of my clean fast blog post. And I would like to encourage you to try it without the flavored coffee for a couple of weeks and see, and then try the flavored coffee that you've been drinking and see if you don't notice a difference. That would be my recommendation for that, because, you know, there's just so many variables and so many different things that the coffee could be flavored with, but we, as a rule, generally don't recommend the flavored coffee. And Melanie?
I am on the same page, actually. I think flavored coffees are definitely not the best, especially because the flavors used to create them, like Jen said, it's usually some sort of artificial flavoring. We don't really know what's in it. It's not real food. Not that you'd be having food during the fast, but it's just unnecessary for the body. So I do encourage you, Lee, to try a span where you don't have it and see if you feel even better than you do already. But that said, I do think it's important to find what works for you. And if that's the one thing that you keep in, I wouldn't stress about it. I mean, it might, who knows what it does down the road, but I just don't, I wouldn't super stress, but I would encourage you to follow Jen's advice and try it without it. I'm personally feel much better after having cut out the flavored coffees and such.
Yeah. And I didn't realize how much better I would feel till I cut all that stuff out too. And then when I've had something, I've noticed such a striking difference. So that's really the best way to show it to yourself, try it without it. But you got to give yourself some time to adjust to not having it first. And then it's pretty clear. And in my blog post that I just talked about, the Clean Fast blog post, there are a bunch of stories at the end. And, you know, I was writing this blog post. I can't even remember when I wrote it. It's been over a year, I think. And in my Facebook group, I was just like, hey, anybody have any stories illustrating the clean fast versus the not clean fast? And within like 30 minutes, I had like 50 people who had a story. And so I just copied and pasted those into the blog post. And it was really interesting how many people were like, yeah, I didn't think it was a big deal. And then this. And it's just so interesting reading their stories. So, you know, do we have a science journal experiment, you know, a study that we can talk about flavored coffee. No, but we do have a lot of people who have been trying it and who have tried it both ways. And so that's, you know, we've got some science. It's based on the idea of the brain thinking that you're eating. Do we have a specific flavored coffee study? No, but we do have a lot of anecdotal evidence. So be your N equals one study and try it on yourself.
And it reminds me, Jen, did you watch that video that the listener sent us about the YouTube video with all the sweeteners?
I haven't had any time to do anything. I've been so busy.
Oh, no worries. Yeah, so a listener sent us a YouTube video, and it's actually it's like a keto group, but it was really interesting. And the two people in it, they basically tested all the different sweeteners and then tested their blood glucose and their ketones afterwards. It was really fascinating. So they tried like pure sugar, and then they did everything. They did stevia, they did erythritol, they did xylitol, malitol, one called, I hadn't even heard of, called allulose, which is like the new kid on the block. It's like the new kid. They tried all of them, monk fruit, and then they measured, and it was really, really interesting. So and then they tried obviously like saccharin and aspartame. So I definitely don't advocate the artificial sweeteners, but if you'd like to know their findings, most of the artificial sweeteners did not result in any change in blood sugar, except the xylitol. That one like really spiked their sugar. And then malitol.
And of course, we're worried about an insulin response. So you can't measure that, you know, at your house.
Right, right. I'm just talking about this video now. It's like a separate. See,
I want to make that point for the listeners, because we get that confusion a lot. People are like, well, here's a whole bunch of studies that show that these different sweeteners don't raise blood glucose. But that's not what we're concerned about here. We're concerned about whether it raises your insulin levels.
Right. It was still, as a side note, interesting video. So I'll put a link to that in the show notes. So if you go to ifpodcast.com/episode60, I'll put a link there to that video.
And just to be clear, we're not saying, so all these things are fine, have them while fasting. We're not. I still believe that the clean fast is what makes the difference.
Right. This is just a tangent. This is like not related.
Well, I just want to make sure, because people are like, oh, they just said that I can have all these
It
was in this video and it didn't raise the blood sugar. And so people, I just know how people are. And so, yeah, they're going to be like, look, it didn't raise blood sugar, so this is all fine. And that's, of course, not what we're talking about. But yeah.
Yeah. I was talking more for just the video as a standalone, talking about different sugar substitutes effects on blood sugar levels for the individuals. So it's very interesting.
Definitely.
All right. Shall we jump into the questions for today?
Yep. Let's get started with those.
So our first question comes from Sheila, and she actually has two questions. I'm going to read the first part of her email with the first question, and then I'm going to combine the second question with another email. So she says, hi, Jen and Melanie. Love and appreciate your podcast. I've tried intermittent fasting in the past, but I've never been able to stick with it until now, thanks to clean fasting, speaking of, and not being so strict with my window. I've been doing it for just over 2 weeks, and as long as I reach that 16-hour mark, I consider it a success. But most of the time, I get to 18 to 20 hours pretty easily. My question is this. I recently listened to the episode where you guys disagreed about what constitutes one meal a day when the window is opened with a snack. Perhaps that would be OSAOMAD. So one snack and one meal a day. Ha ha. So does it really make a difference if you're eating one meal and a snack, or even two meals if your eating window is the same? Assuming the energy balance remains equal? I don't calorie count, but just to clarify, would it really make a difference if I have a 4 to 5 hour window, and within that window, I eat either a 1500 calorie meal, a 1250 calorie meal, and a 250 calorie snack, or two 750 calorie meals? So what are your thoughts on that, Jen?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, you know, theoretically, you could argue it both ways, right? It's funny that this question came up today, because just today, somebody in one of the Facebook groups shared a photo of something that stood out to her from reading Dr. Bert Hearing's appetite correction book, which, of course, we've recommended before. Dr. Hearing, in this quote, said something like, and I'm just paraphrasing because I'm getting it out of my brain. He said something like, theoretically, it would be better to graze throughout your window on small amounts of food until you're satisfied, because that would have less of a up and down. He said insulin in this quote, less insulin up and down, up and down. And he felt like that would be better physiologically. That's what he said theoretically, he thought would be better. So could there be a difference? Maybe. It might be better to have smaller amounts spread out technically throughout your window.
Yeah, I think actually the biggest difference is going to come down to two different things: satiety levels and then also the digestive process. So for the satiety levels, that would be kind of similar to what you were just talking about, Jen, and whether or not you get full more easily, you know, grazing and eating the same amount versus eating it all at once, and then how that makes you feel afterwards. So I think the pattern can affect how you would feel in the fast. You might find that having it all in one big meal makes you less hungry later, or you might find that having two separate meals works best. So it's kind of like a personal thing. And then also I think digestion is huge, because I've been listening. I talk about that ATP Project podcast a lot, and they often talk about the digestive process and how different foods stimulate different digestive enzymes and, you know, require different enzymes, require different amounts of stomach acid. And so it could be different if you have like one whole meal in a certain pattern. So you could have one meal and maybe it's easily digestible, whatever, compared to having like a meal, a smaller meal, and having the whole digestive process, and then having another meal and restarting the whole digestive process. I think it's just really complicated.
Yeah, it is.
It's a matter of, like we always say, finding what works for you. But I do think that how you break it down will affect the digestive process to some extent. So it's really just a matter of finding what works best. So like for me, I tend to munch and graze on like cucumbers and wine and stuff like that. Then I have my main meal with like all my fish, my avocado oil and coconut oil and some veggies and things like that. And then I tend to munch on some like pineapple for dessert. So that's like my personal pattern, but there are different patterns that work for different people. So I encourage you to experiment and just find what works for you.
Yeah, and that really is what works better for me too. So having a snack to start with, and then, of course, I don't then eat for a while. I wait, and then I have dinner later, and then I might munch on a little something, maybe something sweet to close my window. I feel better with that. Something small, then my meal, then something small. But I will say not everyone finds that to be true. Some people find they overeat when they do it like that, and some people do better by opening with the meal itself, and then, you know, if they need something else later, that's fine. I don't do as well with that. One day this weekend while we were on vacation, we had a really early, like, quote, dinner. It was like 3:30, and my husband hadn't eaten yet. He loosely does intermittent fasting, but he usually has lunch. He has more like an 8-hour window with two meals. And so it was 3:30, and he's like, we haven't eaten yet. Let's eat. So we ate what we called dinner, and it was a big meal at a restaurant. And I was like, well, this is going to be it for the day. And then at about 8:30 or 9 o'clock, I was like, I must eat something else. So, you know, some people do great with one big meal at 3:30, and then that's all they have for the day. So as we say a million times to a million people now, there really is not just one way, best way to do it. You have to figure out what works for you. Theoretically, according to Dr. Hearing, like I said, hormonally, it might make a difference to have a little bit as you go along throughout your window. But I've said before that you can make yourself crazy trying to do what is theoretically best when really you just have to do what feels good to you and your body.
Exactly. All right. And then the second part of Sheila's question, she says, my other question is about meat broth that Melanie mentioned in previous podcasts. All the recipes I find online are for bone broth. So what is the difference? And do you have a recipe? Thanks so much for your podcast and have a great day. And then before we answer that, we have another question from Diana. And the subject is bone broth. And Diana says, I'm loving your podcast. I've been IFing for 1 month. Pre-IF, I would mix my bone broth collagen and my super greens powder with pineapple juice and water, but I've given that up since starting IF. I just can't eat tons during my window, and that was a pretty filling morning snack for me. I get bone broth collagen in powder form from Amazon. I heard y'all talking about making your own. Is the powder form I'm getting comparable to what you make? It's just easier for me as I'm going to start breaking my fast with my old concoction of super greens, pineapple juice, and water with my collagen. Thanks so much and keep up the great work.
All right. First of all, talking about the one you're getting, talking about Diana's question about getting the powder from Amazon, this is really a very broad question and it's hard to be specific with the answer because, you know, there are so many varieties of products and some products are going to be so much better than others. You know, if we just say all powdered form of bone broth, there are going to be some that are higher quality than others. That being said, I did some research about this and I do think that you're better off to make it yourself. If you're really looking for all the benefits of a good bone broth, you know, the gelatin is important in it. You just don't really know how they made it. I found some critiques of the powdered bone broths and, you know, they can add all sorts of things. I found an article that talked about, you know, trace amounts of things being inside some of these powders. So just be very, very careful. You know, this is a new supplement on the market. This is not something that's been around for a long time. So just be very aware. And I would make sure you're getting it from a very reputable company that has maybe other products you're familiar with, and be very careful of the source because the article that I read about it talked about all these different ways things could be made, and yet they're all called bone broth powder, and you just don't really know how they're made and what's in them. What do you think about that specifically, Melanie?
Yeah, I agree completely. I would really err on the side of ideally making your own, which I'll talk about a little bit in a second, or secondly, getting the pre-made versions, but really look, and not the powdered versions, but the actual broth, but really looking into the ingredients and the additives and making sure that it's something that's clean and well-made and doesn't have a lot of additives and is something similar to what you would make yourself. So
now I did some interesting learning that I didn't realize before for this question because I had some ideas in my head about bone broth versus, you know, meat broth and whatever. I actually, when you were talking about meat broth, Melanie, were you talking about meat stock or just broth made from meat?
Broth made from meat. It's so funny. Did you look up the official definition of stock?
Well, yeah. And I found a meat stock recipe. You actually do use bones when making a meat stock. And so, you know, there's different levels. I guess a meat broth, if you just made it from meat, that would be one thing.
That'd be meat broth.
Right, meat broth. And then a meat stock is in between a bone broth and a meat broth. But then there's the bone broth. And the difference between the meat stock and the meat stock and the bone broth is interesting. And I didn't know that the stock, you don't cook as long as a bone broth, but there's sometimes you might not want the bone broth and you might actually prefer the meat stock. Did you find that to be true in your research?
Well, I found that stock, it has to be made with bones, but then in addition, it has a mirepoix added. So it's with carrots, onions, and celery.
Yeah, that's the vegetables. Yeah.
Yeah, so that makes it officially
And not
stock.
Only just that, but apparently the bone broth can be hard for people who have digestive issues. Like if you have leaky gut, apparently bone broth can be harsh for those people. And so the meat stock, yes, it's made with bones, but you don't cook it as long. And so it's actually better. I would recommend a meat stock for somebody because that's still going to have the gelatin, but it's not going to be quite as harsh as the bone broth.
Well, yeah, that's the reason I originally talked about meat broth instead of bone broth was because bone broth, it is super healing and it does have a lot of compounds that aren't found in the meat stock. But that said, for people with really sensitive guts, especially people on a gut healing protocol, they might find a meat stock is more gentle in the beginning. Oh, sorry, a meat broth.
Broth.
So basically making broth just from the meat, not the bones, can be more gentle on their system. And then later bringing in the meat, the
stock.
Later bringing in the bone broth. I'm not even going to talk about stock.
But I think that's important because the article that I read said that the meat stock actually is going to have beneficial properties that the meat broth won't. So it's like maybe if you're super sensitive, start with meat broth, then graduate to the meat stock because it's going to have stuff in it that the meat broth doesn't have. And then eventually maybe go into the bone broth. I just didn't realize they're, you know, quite so different. But there are things in the meat stock that are beneficial but not going to bother you the same way bone broth would.
What I found was that basically stock was bone broth with, like I said, the vegetables.
Well, I found an article that talked about that. This is the quote from it. The most significant difference between meat stock and bone broth is that stock is not cooked as long as broth. This results in some pros as well as cons. And the pros, the stock is just as rich in gelatin and detoxifying amino acids as broth. The nutrients are pulled out of the meat and connective tissue during the first several hours of cooking. So that's the difference. And some of the compounds that were a problem for the bone broth had to do with the fact they were cooked longer.
So terminology aside, I suggest if you do have a sensitive gut, starting with a soupy liquid made from meat only.
Yes.
And then you can graduate to a soupy liquid made from bones, and you can progressively cook it longer as you see fit.
That's really the key takeaway I got from this.
Yeah. And then also, because another thing is people who have struggled with histamine intolerance and things like that, bone broth might bother them as well. So that can be another thing. As far as a recipe goes, so I will do a quick plug. If you get my book, What, When, Wine, Lose Weight and Feel Great with Paleo-Style Meals, Intermittent Fasting, and Wine. So the chef who did all the recipes for that, her name is Ariane Resnick. So she actually wrote The Bone Broth Miracle, which is all about making your own bone broth and has tons of recipes. But if you check out my book, I also have a recipe for bone broth and meat broth in there as well. But long story short, it's very easy. I use an Instant Pot. You can also use a slow cooker. But you add, depending if you're making the meat broth, you would add like the meat and water. And then you can add some salt if you like, some apple cider vinegar if you like. The apple cider vinegar might be a little bit more important when you're making bone broth, which is the same thing, but you're going to be using bones instead of meat. And the apple cider vinegar can basically leach out some of the minerals from the bones and things like that. But then, like I said, if you're more sensitive, you might want to go easy on the vinegar aspect. And then you can also add, if you want to add like flavorings with things like vegetables, so carrots, onion, celery, things like that, you can do that as well. But there are different times for cooking and things like that. So if you go to ifpodcast.com/episode60, I'll put a link there with some more information. But super easy to make. I mean, it seems like kind of daunting and that it would be easier to just buy it pre-made. But once you get in the habit, it's really, really easy, especially if you have a pressure cooker, super easy. And as far as where do you get bones, actually Whole Foods often has bones. And even if they're often in the freezer section, but even if they don't have them out front, if you ask, they typically have them or they can start getting them for you. It's not hard. And you can really use all different types of cuts of things depending on what you want to do. So we talked on a previous podcast about how I got the chicken feet and then
yeah, I was gonna say that because the recipe that I found for meat stock had as the ingredients one whole chicken and also 2 to 4 chicken feet.
Oh yes, represent.
Yeah, so there you go. But there it was.
Those are, and they're also super cheap at Whole Foods, and oh, I bet. They're very collagen rich as well.
Right, right.
So. Chicken necks, you can inquire if it has the thyroid gland in it.
Oh, that's great. Man.
So, yep.
All right, well, that was a great question. And I learned some stuff on that one, so that was good. Just that's really more of a continuum. But I didn't realize that – I mean, I know we talked about it before, but I didn't really quite realize that bone broth was going to be a problem for some people. That's pretty much out there. That, you know,
yeah.
Even though it's super healing – that you, it may be a problem if you have leaky gut.
Yeah, you can just have some potentially problematic compounds in there. So, but I think it's really great for maintenance once you do heal your gut and stuff.
Yes,
very healthy.
Yeah, that's what I was reading. All right, you ready for our next question?
Mm-hmm.
This is from Jennifer, and the subject is supplements. Jennifer says, I have been listening to your podcast as of February 2018. I have started with IF last week. Although I have just a few pounds I'd like to lose, it is not why I have begun the lifestyle. I hope to reap all of the benefits. My question is, you talk a lot about the different supplements that you like and that are good. Do you personally take all of the supplements you talk about? It seems like a lot of different things. I want to do what is good for me, but at the same time, I'm not a big fan of pill taking. What would you recommend? And I'm just going to say, because I know Melanie's going to have a lot to talk about with this one, I really take very little. I take serrapeptase in the morning. I take magnesium at bedtime, and that's it. So I'm done. How about you, Melanie?
Well, my answer is actually pretty short as well.
Oh, good.
First of all, Jennifer, thank you for your question. So all the supplements I talk about, because I have experimented with a ton of supplements, but like you, I'm also not a huge fan of pill taking, even though it may seem like I am with all the things I talk about. I am more of a fan of getting nutrition and everything from whole foods, but I do think supplements can be really important for specific issues or tackling certain things. So I'm always experimenting with those. So everything I've talked about, if I personally talked about it, unless I talked about it as like in theory and didn't try it, if I said I tried it or used it, then I did try it or use it. Whether or not I still use it, probably unlikely, especially recently I've been trying to get away from supplements a little bit more and go more and more towards whole foods. So yeah, we've talked about lots of supplements in the past and all throughout different episodes, but yeah, that's my short answer.
So is your regimen now just serrapeptase and that's it?
No, I do. I experiment with a lot of things.
Okay.
It really just depends, and it depends on the day. In the morning, I take serrapeptase and then low dose naltrexone, which we've talked about on the podcast before. And then when it comes to dinner, it really just depends on what I'm experimenting with at the moment. I do typically take like HCL, which is for digestion, also digestive enzymes, although I'm sort of on the fence about those at the moment. And then I do experiment on and off with things like, right now I'm playing around with more quercetin, which is anti-inflammatory. Also, I'll take milk thistle on occasion. I do take probiotics often. I kind of rotate different things. The one that's kind of a consistent one is Prescriptisys, which is a soil-based probiotic that I take, but then I play with other strains as well. So, I mean, it really just depends. And then some days I don't take any. So, and part of me, like I said, kind of wants to do a supplement fast and take like literally nothing for a few weeks and just see what happens. I keep telling myself I'm going to do that. And then I'm like, oh, but I need the digestive enzyme. Or, oh, but I need this. It's so bad. I should try just not taking anything.
Yeah.
But, magnesium
and,
as well.
Yeah. And I will take something if I have a specific ailment. Like, for example, if I felt like I was getting sick, I would take olive leaf extract because it's great for that. And, if I thought I had a cold coming on, I would do that. Or that's pretty much it, though.
Yeah. So, in general, though, it's ideal to get things from Whole Foods. Mm-hmm. Our food's just definitely not as nutritious as it used to be. So that's unfortunate. But
oh, and occasionally I'll supplement with iron. I've always had low iron. I've been anemic before, like all my life. Like every time they've tested me, I was anemic. So I'll take iron sometimes. And the way that I know if I'm not feeling right, I was having some issue with restless legs off and on. And I read about what causes that, and it's caused by low iron. So if I feel like I'm getting a little restless leg kind of thing going on, then I'll take some iron supplement. But that's, you know, I do try to get – I'm not eating as much meat as I used to eat, so I don't know.
I do just want to comment quickly on the restless legs because I've had them in the past, and then they kind of went away, and now they're getting really bad. And I've done a lot of research on them, and low iron can be a cause, but there are a lot of potential causes, and it's really a matter of – I mean, I wish I knew the answer because I still am getting them, but I just don't want listeners to think that low iron is the cause of restless legs, like definitely.
I mean, there's a lot of things that cause a lot of things. That seems to help me.
Yeah. No, that,
when I
that, that's
supplement
one
with
thing.
Iron, like if I ever start to feel I have restless legs, I'll take iron and that helps me.
Yeah, I've heard or I've read that it can be low iron. It can be a dysregulation in dopamine production, which is really interesting. Oh, and this is a tangent. So I was researching like ways to boost dopamine because I think I used to be like a really dopamine strong person, and I've kind of switched to more of like the serotonin side of things. Like I used to feel more of the dopamine in life, so like the drive and the energy and things like that. And now I feel like I'm more
chill,
like serotonin dominant. Yeah, and I kind of miss my dopamine self like a lot. So I've been like researching ways to, you know, stimulate that. And did you know that bargain hunting and like looking for deals is a way to boost dopamine? Like, because I'll do this thing where I'm like on Amazon trying to find like the perfect version of something that I'm looking for, and I've always noticed that it makes me like really happy. But apparently it's like an evolutionary thing because it goes back to it's like goes taxed into the reward system, and dopamine is something that drives you to try to find a reward. So looking so like online shopping.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And the people who like, well, I mean, a lot of people do have, I don't want to say a problem with too much shopping, but you know what I mean? People who like just like there were some TV shows at some point about that where people would just go and like buy things and buy things and buy things. And it's mm-hmm. tapping into that reward center in the brain. So it makes total sense to me. Like any, I don't want to say addiction. I'm not saying you have a shopping addiction at all. No, but you know what I mean.
I like actually don't buy like anything at the stores. Yeah. I just.
But for people who, you know, it's they're getting something in the reward center of their brain for that. That makes sense to me. Totally.
I'm fascinated by dopamine. Other ways you can raise it. Protein's really important for it. And tyrosine is a specific amino acid. But yeah, lots of stuff there. As far as the restless legs go, if anybody has like a go-to thing that's worked for them, definitely let me know because it's been a thing for me recently. And
for me, it really is the iron. The iron makes a difference. And I didn't know that the two were linked until I started reading about it. And then I was like, oh, well, that makes sense. I've always been low in iron. And then when I supplemented, so I don't take it consistently, but if I feel the restless legs coming back, I'll supplement for a few days and then it takes care of it for me. So it seems like for me that is the link.
That's awesome. I'm so jealous that that works for you. I know magnesium does work for some people. Right. Also, there's the whole, have you heard the soap bar thing?
I've heard that. Yeah. I don't understand that at all, but
I don't know. I do it and it kind of helps, I think.
Yeah, that's
yeah. So people say that if you put like two things of soap in your bed, like
under the sheet.
People say different things, like Ivory soap or Dove soap, but it seems to help me.
Yeah, I don't know what the physiological basis of that would be at all.
I know. And I every now and then I'm like, oh, I think I found what's causing it, but it's so variable. It's like not so. I don't know. I think it relates to something going on in my gut.
Yeah.
Probably or something.
So many things go back to that. And our bodies are so complicated. You know, if it was easy to solve these problems, we wouldn't have, you know, so many doctors and different types of medicines and different things and different supplements. And, you know, even with medications that are supposed to be the same, you know, one brand versus the other brand or generic versus whatever, people react differently to them. So there's so many things. We're very, very complicated machines, right?
And then there's the whole placebo effect.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is what that bar of soap always sounds like to me.
I know. So it does sound like that a bit. Yeah.
Who knows? The mind is a powerful thing, as we talked about with the book Biology of Belief. So.
So funny. So I went to a chiropractor the other day, and he was wonderful. He was like really holistic and really took into account the whole body and was just amazing. And somehow, I don't know how he came up, but he was like, "Have you read Biology of Belief?"
Oh, yeah.
I was like, "Oh, it's a sign." Although I'm really upset because so I bought it. I got it on Audible, but the Audible version is an abridged version. It's only 3 hours, which must be like,
yeah,
tiny. And I was reading some of the reviews, and people were like, "This is not." I mean, it had fantastic reviews, but for people who were realizing that it was abridged, they were saying that's not the full version.
Right.
So, I'm gonna get the Kindle version and just
read it.
You know how? And well, I'm gonna read it, and I'm gonna let Kindle read to me.
Oh,
too,
okay.
I multitask.
Okay.
I just recently started doing that. Did you know you can have like your iPhone read?
Yeah,
Kindle?
I did.
And apparently Alexa can too, but. Or computer, my computer, my Alexa. I call her computer.
Yeah.
I'm surprised she's not responding.
I don't do well with, maybe, I don't know, but I don't do well with things reading aloud to me. Maybe that's probably why I don't listen to the podcast and I don't listen. I like to read it. I don't retain it. Like my brain wanders when I'm listening.
I think we talked about this before. I was never an auditory learner, but I think now I do it so much that I think I'm really training that part of the brain, because I literally all day I'm listening to something, which is probably not good because while doing other things, I should probably be more mindful. Literally, there's something talking to me every single second. Audiobooks, podcasts.
Going at all times. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Like when I'm cooking, I like to listen to music.
Oh, see, I used to listen to music. I should...
That's what I do.
I should probably switch back to music.
I like music. I listen to music. And
well, music is another way to boost dopamine.
Well, there we go. See, I've got my dopamine is all boosted up. Thank you, music. I listen to music all the time. My son's trying to get me to buy one of those Apple Pod things, those new ones. What are they called? Home Pods? I don't know. But he was trying to get me to buy one of those. And I'm like, no, I'll just keep listening to my speaker.
Old school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a Bluetooth speaker. It's kind of new school, right?
Definitely.
In the whole realm of, you know, all the different things we've listened to over the years, you never had a Walkman, I'm sure.
That was like right. Yeah, that was right before. I was boombox.
Yeah, but I also bet the Walkman you saw was not a cassette tape Walkman, was it?
It froze. Sorry, what did you say? It froze.
I bet when you think about a Walkman, you think of a CD Walkman. We had cassette tape Walkmans.
Oh. I had cassette tapes when I was really little. like preschool.
I had cassette tapes that was like the next technology for us. We had records.
Oh my goodness. At Chick-fil-A, they would give away those cassette tapes.
That's true.
For the,
they would. The books.
For the, what's it called?
They had these little books in their little kid meal.
What was that series? What was that series called?
No, I don't know.
Oh, it was so good. Wait.
VeggieTales? Was that?
Love VeggieTales, but not VeggieTales. Adventures in Odyssey.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had some of those.
Oh my goodness.
Yep.
Yes.
So you had cassette tapes. Well, see, there you go.
I am going, oh my goodness, I'm looking at the Adventures in Odyssey now on Google. Yes, and there was the one with the Bigfoot. Oh, man. I'm going to listen to these.
There you go.
I wonder if they're on Spotify.
It's still not music. You're still not listening to music.
I want to be a kid. I used to listen to music all the time.
Yeah.
All right. So we have one more question. This comes from Tiff. And the subject is Confusion Reigns. And Tiff says, "G'day, Jen and Melanie from Australia." I probably should have done that in an accent, but I can't. "I love your podcast and I've been obsessed with everything IF. I've been fasting daily for a month and basically do one meal a day with a 3 to 4 hour window, clean fasting. I was recently diagnosed with type 2 diabetes and since fasting, my blood sugar has been slowly improving. However, my morning numbers are high, ranging from 10 to 13 millimolars a liter." And I looked that up and that's 180 to 234. If you're thinking about it in terms of blood glucose. "I take one metformin at night with my meal. I've removed fructose from my diet, but I'm eating some carbs in my one meal a day. I fear removing these would make me miserable. My question is, will continuing one meal a day slowly fix my morning sugars? Is it a matter of patience, or do I need to try eliminating carbs at least initially? Like I said, I've only been doing this a month and I have a lot of stored fat, so I am wondering what your opinion is on what's the best strategy might be. Time or adjusting food? I hope this makes sense. Thank you for all you do. You're amazing." All right. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this, Jen.
Well, this is a question we actually get frequently in the Facebook groups where people talk about how their blood glucose actually looks worse for a while, especially in the morning. And so we always send them to a blog post written by Dr. Jason Fung about the dawn phenomenon, and we will link this in our show notes. But he does the best job explaining it. I mean, he's a doctor, and he talks about the medical background behind why this happens. It basically, to summarize in a really short way, and forgive me, I'm not a doctor, but it has to do with the fact that your body is moving the glucose out of storage while you're fasting and sleeping. Of course, you're sleeping overnight, so you're not eating. And then in the morning you wake up, there the blood glucose is. It's visible for you. But the dawn phenomenon is what he talks about. And according to Dr. Fung, it occurs in about 75% of type 2 diabetes or patients with type 2 diabetes. And it has to do with hormones that the body is secreting in the morning. And it's a really complicated process. Read Dr. Fung's take on it. You know, I could try to summarize it for you, but I might butcher it and say it in a way that is wrong. So read what he has to say about it from our link. But know that it is normal for this to occur, and it does puzzle a lot of people. Now, you know, as far as like the question that you asked specifically, will continuing one meal a day slowly fix your morning blood sugars? We don't know the answer to that. Theoretically, you know, the answer may be yes. If your body, if the fasting is enough for you, and over time, you'll know, you know, by checking your numbers, that sort of thing. Maybe it will be enough. But again, maybe it isn't. Your body, you know, is going to be specific to you. And so theoretically, it could help over time. Maybe it won't. You asked if you had to adjust the food and go to low carb. Maybe that would help you more. You know, Dr. Fung talks about this as well too, lowering carbs. If you're type 2 diabetic and you're really trying to give the 1-2 punch to your problem, lowering carbs, especially highly refined carbs, would definitely be something to consider doing. You know, Melanie and I both are carb eaters. We like carbs. And I know that you mentioned you would like to eat carbs as well, but yeah. You know, I'm just going to tell you the truth. It may make a difference for you. So you could try that. But again, having the high blood sugar in the morning is something that is common. And Dr. Fung explains why that is so in his blog post. I hope I explained that well. I felt like I was bumbling all around. Melanie, what do you want to say about it?
So it's so funny. So when I first read the question, that was my first thing. I was like, oh, cortisol spike in the morning. That's what it is. So you know, make sure you test like a little bit, like an hour or so after you wake up and see if it is still that high. You might find that it's gone down. Dawn effect was the first thing that I thought of right away. I do have a question though. Dr. Fung's post on that, is he talking about just in general, people in general experiencing that, or is he talking about people with type 2 diabetes experiencing
that? Well, he says everyone experiences it, but it's going to be more pronounced in the people who have, you know, the type 2 diabetes.
Type 2.
Yeah. Okay. It's going to be more pronounced, but it is a typical effect. It's based on your circadian rhythm. It's normal. But see, for those of us who do not have type 2 diabetes, we're going to have smaller swings in levels.
Okay. Yeah, because that was my first initial thought was, yes, it's normal. But then at the same time, I mean, if you're having like over – I don't know what the reference range
right,
is.
Right, and
– but if you're – because if you're having a spike of, if it's like two, like she said,
really high, yeah.
I mean, 234 in the morning, that's really high. So I don't want her to think
that it's just fine. Oh, that, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That's what I don't want listeners to think. We are not doctors.
Exactly.
First, yeah. We are really not doctors. And so I don't want you to think, oh, it's fine if I have blood sugar levels of 200 exactly. after fasting yeah. for, that it could be the Dawn effect. But ideally, we do want to look at those levels and we do want to get them, you know,
yeah,
in a good range.
This is a conversation to have with a doctor, really.
But I will say a few little quick thoughts. I agree with Jen. Low carb might be something that could really, really work for you. You could definitely try that. I would even say you could try a keto approach if that's something that appeals to you. It's definitely all the rage right now. But I mean, people on keto often do see, you know, really drastic improvements in their blood sugar levels. And that is definitely a thing. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be on it for life, right. But it might just be a matter of, you know, doing it for a while and really fixing your insulin regulation, fixing your blood sugar levels, and then bringing back carbs, you know, back in. So that might be something that would work for you. I'd also definitely really encourage you to look at the type of carbs. So you said you don't have fructose, but we don't know what type of carbs you're having. And I've talked about this study before, but they did this study pretty recently where they looked at people's blood sugar responses to various foods, and it varies dramatically between different people, like so dramatically. So it might just be a matter of finding the type of carbs that work for you. So that might be, you know, more starchy vegetables. It might be more, I mean, you said you cut out fructose, so maybe it's not fruit for you specifically, but I would definitely encourage you to try different things. In any case, I would really encourage you to stay away from the super processed refined sugars. I mean, I really, really encourage you to stay away from those. Even things like honey, if this is an issue right now, I would probably stay away from that as well. I also wanted to just mention as one last thing. So metformin is very effective at addressing blood sugar levels. But did you know, Jen, have you heard of berberine?
Yeah, we've talked about it before on the podcast, I think.
Oh, yeah, we did. We had a question about it. Now I, like, know all about it. But basically, berberine is an – I don't know what it's from, but it's a very bitter herb with a lot of health benefits. But studies have shown consistently that it – is as effective as metformin in lowering blood sugar levels. So especially for people with type 2 diabetes. And I'll put a link to the references in the show notes. But that's something you could also experiment with TIF if you are looking to go a more natural route with some additional health benefits as well. So if you go to ifpodcast.com/episode60, that's where I will put a link to all of the things, the references, everything we talked about,
yep.
All the stuff.
Yeah, and again, just to reiterate, we are not doctors, so definitely talk to your doctor if you're alarmed about those numbers, because that's the takeaway we want you to get. We're not, you know, read Dr. Fung's take on it. I would even highly recommend his book, The Diabetes Code. That's his – I haven't read that one yet. I haven't had time. I've been so busy. But The Diabetes Code, if I had type 2 diabetes, I would absolutely read The Diabetes Code. And he's going to explain all that in there. And, you know, that's who I would ask questions of him and read his advice versus ours.
All righty. So, wish we had time for more, but it looks like, as per usual, we are running out of time. But Jen has lots more time now that she's...
I do. I have a very busy June coming up, but...
An exciting June.
It is exciting. Yeah, I'm going to travel a couple of times, and I've just got a lot going on in June. June is busy. Tomorrow I have to drive and pick up my son at college. She's coming home, the one that's in Savannah. So my first day of retirement, I am driving to pick up my son. So I will not be lounging around the house.
How far of a drive is that?
It's 2.5 hours to Savannah.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to get him, bringing him back with all of his stuff.
Well, I'm about to go to acupuncture.
Well, have a good time.
Have you had acupuncture?
I have never had that, no. I've done some reading about acupressure and used some of that, some of those points.
I'm going to try to start going every week. Apparently, if you do it consistently, it's just really amazing. And even the studies on it, they'll compare real acupuncture to like fake acupuncture, and they'll see effects with the real acupuncture.
Yeah, I believe, so, I do believe in all that. I believe in even acupressure, the pressure points in our bodies. Yeah. I do believe in that.
I think it's huge.
Yeah.
All righty. So a few things for listeners before we go. If you go to ifpodcast.com/episode60, like I've said a lot, that's where I'll put links to everything that we've talked about. You can also go to ifpodcast.com/stuffwelike, and that's where we put links to all of the things that we like, all of the books, the supplements, all the stuff. You can also follow us on Instagram. Our handle is ifpodcast. Someday you'll be able to follow us on Twitter. It's literally on my to-do list. I'm almost done completely moving, and then I'm going to start my new morning self where I tackle all of these things to
awesome.
Do.
Awesome.
That's what I tell myself. but really, days I wake up really early, I feel like really good. I think just because I get tired at night.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, capitalize on this.
So what do you consider to be really early? I'm so curious. When you say you wake up really early.
Like in the eights.
Yeah, that's so funny. That's that.
If I got up in the eights, I like tap myself on the back.
See, I can't sleep past, 5:30. Maybe that'll change. My alarm goes off at 5:30. So even like on vacations, I'm awake at 5:30. So I'm going to have to, my body's going to have to settle into the new pattern. I wonder, like a year from now, what time will I be getting up? I don't know.
I want to go like a month where I plan out my exact like get up time and go to bed time. And we talked about this on the last podcast, like my eating window time even.
Yeah.
I just want to plan it all out and stick to it and plan out everything and see what happens.
Well, that would be interesting.
Because, yeah. It got to be firm though. Gotta,
yeah.
I just got to decide what time would be best. Oh, and then lastly, I mentioned this before, but you can help support our podcast and make it possible by going to patreon.com/ifpodcast. So that's where you can pledge support, even if it's just like 50 cents or a penny, like we discussed. That would be awesome. If everybody gave a penny, we'd be good.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So any final thoughts from you, Jen, before we go?
No, I don't think so. I think it was a great episode.
Alrighty. Well, I will talk to you next week.
All right. Talk to you all then.
Right,
bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Intermittent Fasting Podcast. Please remember, the opinions we discussed on this show do not constitute medical advice. We're not doctors. Check out ifpodcast.com for more information on us. Theme music was composed by Leland Cox. See you next week.